Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks. We're coming to you from New York this week. And this week, we're going to talk to you about an exciting demo day that occurred with the Startup Bootcamp team here in New York. But before we get to that, a few announcements and the news. Don't forget, Finovate Fall is coming up on September 8th to 9th in New York City. And Finovate is the premier conference in fintech. We've supported them from Movin's perspective. And Breaking Banks has been a media partner for Finovate now for a number of years. So if you want to get a discount to come along to Finovate Fall, register now with the code BREAKINGBANKS20 and you'll get a 20% discount off the registration. Now, the day before Finovate, on the 7th of September, Next Money New York City will be on. I'll be keynoting there, JP Nichols, Sam Maul, two great hosts of the Breaking Banks show, who you're going to hear from later. They'll be there too. And we'll be doing the show live from the stage at Finovate. Actually, we'll be doing the show from the stage. I don't think it'll be live on the day, but anyway. So go to nextmoney.org to register for Next Money New York City, September the 7th. Don't forget, you can get a discount for Breaking Banks as well there. FinDevor Silicon Valley, another Finovate event, is going to happen on October 18th and 19th in Silicon Valley. It's going to showcase the latest tools, platforms, case studies for techies in fintech. Go there and register using BBanksDevR20 and get a 20% discount on that too. So before we get to demo day for Startup Bootcamp today, a few quick news items. I don't know whether you saw, but fintech has hit the big time in terms of the index. Keefe, Bruyette and Woods and the exchange operator NASDAQ have put together a financial technology index for NASDAQ. That's pretty cool. So the index includes giants such as Visa, Lending Club and others. The NASDAQ code for the index is KFTX. So this tracks 49 different companies with a total of $785 billion in market value. If you thought fintech was a flash in the pan, a fad, it's obviously real. We've got the market tracking it now. This is pretty big news. But in other news, of course, this week, everyone is talking about the crazy Pokemon Go trend and what's been happening there. Pokemon Go, reportedly, the success of Pokemon Go has added over $7 billion to Nintendo's share price. We have hundreds of people at Central Park and others storming looking for these elusive Pokemons. We have a driver reportedly crashed in Baltimore into a police car playing Pokemon Go earlier today. And we've got in Saudi people being arrested at the airport for playing Pokemon Go behind the security area. This is pretty crazy. In fact, there's some debate over this because the Saudi clerics say Pokemon Go violates Islamic beliefs. Isn't it interesting, the augmented reality, geotagging, the locations behind Pokemon Go, what is it about the combination of those technologies that's really made Pokemon Go such a viral success? It's incredible. Be interesting to see how businesses really absorb this information and understand the way AR, augmented reality, is going to change the way we think about business. But of course, in other big news, we had Vitalik Buterin on the show a few weeks ago, and Ethereum has had some challenges as a result of the DAO, the DAO, the Distributed Autonomous Organization, and a massive fraud that occurred there with one of the users setting up an interesting algorithm in the DAO. And so what they had to put to the community was a choice whether they hard fork the underlying software behind Ethereum and reset those transactions, reversing that fraud, or whether they keep it going. So at this time, as we've seen this sort of roll out, I think the hard fork occurred on Tuesday evening, New York time. But now we're seeing that about 60% of the Ethereum user base, the miners and the users on the platform, have accepted the hard fork. So the assumption is that The other chain, the two simultaneous chains of the blockchain or Ethereum's ledger right now, that eventually over time, the shorter chain, those users on the shorter chain will be compelled to come over onto the forked, the hard forked version. So if you want a bit more information about that, we're going to try and do on our blockchain special, we're going to try and get into some more details on a bit more of that technology behind the blockchain. So look, just a reminder, if you haven't been following, the book's doing really well, Augmented Life in the Smart Lane. It's been out a couple of months now. Of course, last week it was doing still well on the Kindle store, number one in robotics, number one in biotechnology. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, please do. Augmented Life in the Smart Lane. That's the latest book from myself, Alex Lightman, JP Rangaswamy, and Andy Lark. So we'll be happy for your support. But this week, of course, we're talking about Demo Day in New York. This week, we're immersed back into the New York fintech scene, courtesy of Startup Bootcamp Fintech and their inaugural Demo Day for 10 promising fintech startups here in New York. Now, the 10 demoing companies had been involved in a 13-week program. They'd had access to more than 350 mentors, venture capital firms, and professionals from within the banking, payments, and regulatory compliance space who act as these mentors from the Startup Bootcamp program. We even have some regulars from breaking banks there, like Santander, MasterCard, Route 66, they're sponsoring the event. But really, we already know that New York is a fintech center. It overtook Silicon Valley for fintech investment back in 2015 to lead the US's fintech presence. But with London's somewhat uncertain future after the Brexit, the question now becomes, do New York and Silicon Valley, are they able to capitalize and take a clear lead from our fintech cousins over the pond in London? Adrienne Harris, the special advisor to the President on Banking and Fintech, was speaking at the Startup Bootcamp Demo Day in New York, and she had this to say about the Obama administration's interest in fintech and the overall role of fintechs, entrepreneurs, and policymakers in the future of the U.S. financial services industry.
So as I said, your task is to think about what is your purpose as part of that evolution? What void are you trying to fill? How are you going to improve financial services and financial institutions and our economy? And my task as a policymaker is related. My job is to help you all, provide you an environment that creates the space for creativity and innovation, while also being mindful of protecting the financial system and consumers. When I look back at all the work that this administration has done, now that we have, you know, 6 or 7 months left to go, there's been incredible work that this president has done to support entrepreneurs and innovation and to secure the financial system. Just last month, the president announced a major expansion to the Small Business Administration's Startup in a Day initiative in 100 cities, where there are now efforts underway to help streamline licensing, permitting, and other requirements needed to start a business, with the goal of enabling entrepreneurs to apply for everything they need to start a business in 24 hours. Additionally, three federal agencies adopted new expansions to the National Science Foundation Innovation Corps, which is an entrepreneurship training program. Over 800 teams have completed the curriculum from 192 universities in 44 states, resulting in the creation of 320 companies. And last month, over 30 companies joined a new industry-led tech inclusion pledge. And as part of the pledge, companies are committing to take concrete action to make sure that their technology workforce looks like America.
Now, we spent a few days at the Startup Bootcamp offices with their teams in New York City and with the resident startups, and this was at the Grind offices in Lower Manhattan. We're really trying to get a feel for what the last 13 weeks immersed in this program has been like and how they got set up for their demo day. Now, what we found was some startups that were quite mature and had used the 13 weeks to really consolidate their pitch, hone some of their skills in the tech, while others had completely pivoted during the 13-week program and were in the closing stages of taking their revamped business to market and launching it at the demo day. Jesse Padel, the managing director of Startup Bootcamp Fintech, who's based in New York, he talked about how the different startups leveraged the program over the last 13 weeks. So let's start with the 13 weeks. What's that process been like over the last 13 weeks? What's happened?
A lot has happened. Well, something interesting that happened was four of the teams pivoted completely in the first 2 weeks, one in the first 8 hours. We have people that were working on products for months, sometimes longer, and weren't really seeing any traction. They weren't really getting anywhere. And because we brought a whole bunch of interesting people in the room, you know, lean experts and investors and people who've kind of been there and done that and kind of shook it up a little bit, they realized that they were working on something that no one wanted. And so what we've done with these teams for the last 13 weeks is trying to help them to figure out what do people really want and how do I build it? And is there a real market need for this? It's been super duper intense. They've had tons of meetings. They've met our partners. We have 7 backing partners here. 3 are banks. 1 is MasterCard. 1 is Thomson Reuters. We have some VCs and law firms also that back this accelerator locally. And they've taken meetings with a variety of financial institutions and investors just to give them some key feedback.
Marcus Nurk famously coined the phrase FinTech Zoo back in November 2015, and that term was wandering around in New York City at the demo day also. But this is sort of referring to the curiosity banks have with the emerging fintech scene and the plethora of startups that have come into the scene. Now, banks are also very keen to engage with these weird fintech creatures, and we could see their delegates and mentors also visiting demo day, just as we see them increasingly trying to tap in on the blockchain meetups and attempting to do their own hackathons. But the question is, what can actually be achieved in practical terms at demo days like this? Well, the CEO of Startup Bootcamp FinTech, Nectarios Liolios, said, how was that, Sam? Did I get the pronunciation right? He said, it's important to have clear outcomes for the early stage fintechs that participate in demo day. Let's hear what he had to say.
We want to achieve, bearing in mind that these are early stage businesses, right? We want to achieve 2 things. We want them to be enterprise ready, and we want them to be investor ready. And we built the ecosystem around that. So we also introduced VCs quite early on into the conversation. And the founders met nearly 60 different VC firms.
Wow.
But none of these players will actually immediately invest in these businesses because they're too early stage, right?
Right.
But they help them get ready, understand the kind of the value of metrics, the importance of measurable results, no matter at what stage in their journey they are.
So we got the chance to work with 3 of the demo day teams, or the Startup Bootcamp teams that were involved in this 13-week program.
Let's get serious for a second. Alice from Alice in Wonderland is my favorite character. She taught me that the only way to achieve the impossible is to believe it is possible. We, Token, extremely passionate and strongly believe that we can solve one of the biggest problems we all have. And the problem is our credit cards get stolen when we shop online. We help those who got their credit cards stolen and those who want to avoid that. We help people who shop online every day.
That is Token. So we're going to introduce you to Zoha and Yana, who you guys are 2 of the founders of Token, right? So Zoha, tell us, what is Token?
Token is a solution that enables people to buy online with their credit cards without giving away their credit card information. So in essence, we help people make fraud a thing of the past for themselves.
Hence the name Token. We're obviously talking a lot about tokenization of cards. So explain from a user perspective how this would actually work for them. Do they have an app on the phone? Does it sit in between Apple Pay? And how does the tech actually work?
Apple Pay and Android Pay enables you to pay in the store. When you buy online, you actually need to put in your information. You need to type in your name, you need to type in your credit card number, expiration date, and a security code. So the tokenization that we created, in essence, you use your mobile phone to generate different identities. You get a 16-digit number, a name, expiration date, and a security code that none of them has nothing to do with you. And you can use them to pay online. So you're going to have 1 payment identity at Amazon, another one at eBay, another one at AT&T when you pay your bills. So essentially, you can check out exactly like you do today after you saved your current profile, but you do it with a peace of mind that even if this merchant is being breached and information is being stolen, your information was never there to begin with. So hackers has nothing to steal.
So Zohar, tell me a little bit more about the technology involved in Token that's behind the scenes.
The technology and the user experience that our users are experiencing is very simple. We worked very hard to make it look very simple. We actually embedded our technology into the rails, into the credit card networks to enable our users to pay on every merchant worldwide from day one. But the technology behind it has a lot of security in it, a lot of validations. The information itself that we're protecting, your real information, is actually saved off the grid at the same data centers that the financial institutions are using, and we're physically connected to their infrastructure. We made it very scalable.
So then do you need to be PCI compliant to be able to issue tokens for cards?
We are PCI compliant. Though the way that we implement it is actually we're not required to be, because we integrated with MasterCard and Visa with their tokenization on the back end, so we essentially don't even save the credit card information. So we went the extra mile and then another extra mile to make sure that the security is there. Given our personal background, we are security fanatics around that.
So Zohar, tell me a little bit more about the team behind Token and what the last 13 weeks at Startup Bootcamp has been like for you.
We were very fortunate to be able to comprise a very strong team around Token. Yana, our COO, is a marketing and operation expert. She's working in this space for more than 10 years. Vladimir Vajer, he's a CTO. He's developing fintech products since the time that fintech didn't even know it's going to be called fintech. And me, myself, I started my career doing data security for the Israeli Air Force. The last 13 weeks, wow, this was intense. Really intense. We ran a closed alpha with a few hundred users, got a lot of feedback, did a lot of fine-tuning and iteration. We met with around 20 banks and financial institutions, and one of the major things that we are able to accomplish is get an agreement with a leading processor and an issuing bank to give us the BIN number. One of the major things that we did during this program is really challenge ourselves. Thanks to the program and the team over here, we were able to meet face-to-face with hundreds of experts in terms of compliance, legal, marketing, payment, security, etc. And for the first 5 weeks, we just asked them to find loopholes. Find what is it that we're doing wrong? What assumptions did we make that are not right? And really challenge ourselves. It really helped us to actually understand that we aimed a bit too high, even in some places, and that we can focus more on user experience.
Now, you guys, is your team based in Israel? And if so, then why did you end up here in New York?
We get the best of both worlds. Our development is in Israel, where, as we all know, the tech is very advanced. So our CTO and development team is in Israel. And of course, we decided that the business needs to be here in the US.
So what is the outcome you wanted from Startup Bootcamp and the program the last 13 weeks? And have you achieved that?
When we started Startup Bootcamp, we didn't really know what to expect. You're getting into an experience. We knew it's going to be a journey. But for us, there were a few things that were important. The first thing was to build a network, to really get familiar with the community, the financial institutions, the fintech, and all the innovation around financial systems, specifically around New York City, which is the hub of that in the US. The second thing for us was really to validate that what we're doing is indeed what people want. And the third thing was to make sure that we're getting our BIN number and the processor. When you look at all of those together, those actually represent the barriers of entry to the fintech world, which are much higher than the other vertical industries. And we put a goal to make sure that by those 13 weeks, we're going to overcome those. And we have, and we're very happy about it.
So where can people find out more about Token, and how soon do you expect to be in market?
I invite all of you to go online, www.jointoken.com. You can register online, reserve an invite, and we're going to start sending invites to download Token starting August.
Well, Zohar and Yana from Token, thanks for joining us on the Breaking Banks show today.
Thank you so much.
Listen, we're going to go to a quick break right now, but we wanted to thank our sponsor, Temenos. Before that, Temenos is on the forefront of providing banking solutions to increase financial inclusion. Check them out at temenos.com. We'll be right back after this brief break. Hey guys, it's Brett King from Breaking Banks. If you've ever listened to my podcast and enjoyed it, you'll know I focus a lot on the future. When you look at artificial intelligence, robotics, self-driving cars, smart infrastructure, smart cities, health tech, gene editing, computers everywhere that are smart, this is going to have major impact in the way we live our life and the way society interacts. That's the subject of my new book, Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out in the first week of May. Ramez Nam, the Philip K. Dick award-winning author of Nexus, said, "You need to read this awesome roadmap of the future that Brett King has created." Please go and check out Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, available on Amazon for order today.
Consult Hyperion is a boutique payments consultancy based in New York and London, which helps clients deal with the rapid changes happening in the payment space. We deal with EMV optimization, helping issuers, acquirers, and merchants deliver value from their EMV investments. We help with the technical challenges involved in the digital transformation of payments through tokenization and mobile devices, and with the business cases behind the development of future payment technologies such as the blockchain and instant payments. Come and find out more at www.chyp.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. We're going to continue our startup bootcamp week this week from New York and speak to Alpha Pack.
Every bank has to be innovative, and the easiest way to do that is to work with fintech startups. Obvious, right? So imagine you're swimming in a river. Now imagine you're swimming and you have a 100-pound lead weight bolted onto your shoulder. You're struggling to keep your head above water. That's what it feels like to be a business unit leader or innovation director at a financial institution that's trying to work with fintech startups right now. So that's why we built Sandbox, and it does exactly what the name suggests. It gives financial institutions a safe place to quickly try out new technology.
Ravi Balasubramanian is the founder of AlphaPack. They're trying to solve a big problem, one that a lot of us have been working on for a long time. How to make it easier for financial institutions to innovate.
In our direct experience in being in startup bootcamp, speaking to many different financial institutions, we found that for two reasons. One is data security concerns, and the second one is really how does a piece of software integrate with their legacy systems. To solve that, we built Sandbox.
Sky Izzard is Ravi's co-founder.
So to expand on what Ravi was just saying, when I think about Sandbox, I think about the App Store. So the App Store is really, really excellent from a developer's point of view. I build my software and I upload it to the iOS or the Android store. I'm basically guaranteed that any user that installs that software via that store is going to have a successful experience. The software is going to install correctly. It's going to work correctly, everything. And from the user's point of view, it's really excellent because you can try a bunch of different solutions to solve a particular problem on your mobile device very quickly. Installing apps is lightning fast, and you can install 5 of them and delete the 4 you don't want. And this is important as far as the banks and credit unions that we serve are concerned. The user is always in control of their data. I know when I install an app if it can see my contacts, if it can look at my text messages, my calendar, right? And I can elect not to install it if it does something that I don't feel is appropriate, right? We want to bring that same kind of experience to both the developers and users in banks and credit, or for banks and credit unions.
So you have a lead customer. Tell us who you're working with and how that relationship got started.
Yeah, sure. It involved a lot of pivots. But our lead customer, our first pilot customer, is Digital Credit Union, which is the largest credit union in Massachusetts.
So you said you pivoted. What did you pivot from, and how's that different than what you're doing today?
Sure. So we started life as a B2C robo-advisor. Well, let's just say the unit economics in that space aren't really that great, and it's hard to build a sustainable moat versus the incumbents. And so we really pivoted to, well, we didn't pivot, but we also wanted to solve the problem of making integration and automatically solving security for vendors to banks. Well, we wanted to attack that problem, I guess. So Sandbox exists today, and RoboBanker, which is sort of the banking advisor that I alluded to earlier, is designed to sit on top of it.
Okay, so you've built an application to sit on top of your own platform.
Yeah, we take our own medicine.
And as Sky mentioned, we'd started working with DCU, and we'd found that this data security and system integration problem really existed with them. And then when we got into Startup Bootcamp down here in New York City, we got access to a much wider swath of the fintech ecosystem. So we've spoken to almost 100 different, small regional and credit unions. We've spoken to some of the largest banks in the world here. We've spoken to life insurance companies, and we found that structural problem of data security and system integration exists across the fintech ecosystem. And forget about costs, because sure, these institutions are supposedly rich, right? The big problem is that this can add anywhere from 4 months up to 2 years of additional development time for every single project. And what we're hearing is that everyone is super excited about something like Sandbox because it solves such a big issue for them.
So this whole notion of a sandbox to play in solves, as you said, a lot of problems. And I'm wondering if you think it also solves just this whole fear of fintech partnerships. Because I hear from a lot of financial institutions, this is great, I saw this great idea, but we don't think that's going to be able to work with our environment.
And that's, you hit the nail on the head. Kind of when we do our kind of diagnostic sales interviews, what we heard was, if I don't find the next and greatest thing, I'm not going to get fired. But if I try something out and somehow some piece of data escapes, or we start a project and it doesn't integrate, I will lose my job. So our goal was really, can we reduce the structural barrier that exists to really be able to have more innovation come to market much faster by protecting the bank right from the onset and really just making it safe for them to innovate?
So you've been here for 13 weeks, and this is coming up on the end. We have demo days coming up in just a couple of days. What's your demo going to be like, and how's that maybe different from where you started 13 weeks ago?
Wow, that's, sometimes we wake up and what were we thinking 13 weeks ago? So it's been a tremendous, tremendous learning experience. And I think even the conceptions that we came into and thinking what we were going to learn were totally wrong. And I think the biggest thing that we achieved through Startup Bootcamp was the actual tapping into the wider ecosystem here and forcing ourselves to go out into the market and actually validate both the problem that existed and quantifying it, as well as then the proposed initial solution.
along those lines, you know, Sandbox is really a software deployment platform. So, you know, we're going to focus on the narrative of how you would use it to add value. It's not going to be a traditional product demo the way that you might associate with a demo day.
So what's your hope of the best outcome that can happen after demo day?
So the ideal outcome for us is we've already got the one pilot with Digital Credit Union. We've got a couple more that are actually coming through our sales funnel. So we know there are going to be a lot of banks in the room. So we'd love to get more pilots on the board. We've also not taken any external funding so far. So at the end of demo day, we will be actually raising our first seed round. So really it's more pilots actually securing a seed round.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're going to get that same answer out of everyone you ask here.
So what's this whole 13-week program been from your perspective?
Literally a boot camp. I think Ravi and I came in with a certain set of expectations about networking and the value of the network we'd get, and that has certainly been immensely valuable, but I completely underestimate the educational value of this experience. We learned so much about diagnostic sales here, which for a company like ours is completely critical. It's also just an immense amount of value in that kind of peer pressure to just run as fast as you can. And so we've been doing that. And, you know, we're going to have to keep the intensity level up after this. And I think, you know, that's going to be a challenge because this place really, really injected a lot of adrenaline into your veins.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, just to second what Sky said, I think one of the most valuable things here has been that network and just having a safe place to be wrong. You know, every startup has really good days, but then having a support network in place on the really bad days to kind of slap you around a little bit and say, all right, get over yourself, get back out there.
Part of the value of an accelerator program like this is access to experienced mentors who can give you advice about the business you're building. Even if it's tough love kind of advice.
You know, one mentor that I jumps out, she literally sat down with us every single week and has gone through our process in terms of this is how you need to think about the strategy of the business itself. Here's how you need to be thinking about not just the economics, but how do you portray the economics to someone who is a potential customer versus someone who is a potential investor.
I second that. I'd also give a shout out to Fabian.
That's Fabian Jimenez, who's a mentor here at Startup Bootcamp.
And, I mean, she gave us our first real ass-kicking when it came to an investor deck, and so that's been immensely useful.
So what did Fabian have to kick your ass about?
Every slide.
So you weren't getting it right.
No, I don't think it's that simple. I think all the ideas were there, but talking to investors or talking to customers or talking to future employees, there's always got to be a story, right? And that's part of Nectarios's messaging to us as well. And I think what Fabian really focused on was what our story should be, if that makes sense.
And did you find that you had to adapt that story a little bit? You talked about talking to potential investors, talking to financial institutions, talking to vendors, talking to employees. Those are different audiences. You have to kind of customize that message a little bit, don't you?
Oh, immensely. Selling isn't about like going in there and trying to just push a product. It's about understanding whether a customer even has a problem that you can even address. And so that's very, very much the approach that Ravi and I take. And so it's not even presenting to customers. It's having a conversation with a customer in our case. And I'm only talking about the FI side of the marketplace. I'm not even addressing the vendors or the startups. You know, investors, on the other hand, they care that you can execute and they care that you have, you know, the unit economics work and that your initial target market makes sense. But beyond that, they care about the vision, right? And so it's a very, very different conversation.
So talk about your background.
So it's been, yeah, in terms of my background, I went to UPenn, did finance and marketing there as well as electrical engineering, went off and worked for this small company maybe heard of called Lehman Brothers. It was my first job out of school. I was there in 2008. successfully managed to stay on Wall Street for a couple more years, both here out in Singapore. And then I was a portfolio manager at Harvard. And that's really where Sky and I connected. We were roommates at the time as well. And as two 20-somethings were like, hey, we want to go change the world. And that's really how the story for AlphaPack started in November 2014.
I'm a programmer, really, when you get to it. And Ravi and I, we met at Harvard Management Company. And so I, you know, before that, I was doing programming for MIT's AI lab, MIT CSAIL. And then before that, I was really an undergraduate student at Tufts, studied computer science and psychology.
So you're from Boston. You had to come down here to New York for 13 weeks. How did that all work out? Where are you living? What's that look like for you?
I'm on my aunt's third floor in Brooklyn. It's actually a deal of a lifetime. She's letting me stay there for free. It's very, very hot up there right now. You know, it's tough. It is tough coming down here. I mean, my girlfriend's back in Boston. I miss her a lot. She definitely has put up with a lot over the last 13 weeks. So thank you, Morgan.
So my life is a little bit nicer than Sky's, mainly because Sky is having fun, but my fiance lives here in New York. So I'd always been doing the reverse commute from Boston to New York. So last 13 weeks have actually been kind of nice to be able to go home and sleep in my own bed and not have to commute too much. But you know, as soon as this program ends, we'll be back on the road and going out to clients. And it's a life of a traveling startup, right?
We'll be right back after this brief break. Hey guys, it's Brett King from Breaking Banks. If you've ever listened to my podcast and enjoyed it, you'll know I focus a lot on the future. When you look at artificial intelligence, robotics, self-driving cars, smart infrastructure, smart cities, health tech, gene editing, computers everywhere that are smart, this is going to have major impact in the way we live our life and the way society interacts. That's the subject of my new book, Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out in the first week of May. Ramez Nam, the Philip K. Dick Award-winning author of Nexus, said, "You need to read this awesome roadmap of the future that Brett King has created." Please go and check out Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, available on Amazon for order today.
Consult Hyperion is a boutique payments consultancy based in New York and London, which helps clients deal with the rapid changes happening in the payment space. We deal with EMV optimization, helping issuers, acquirers, and merchants deliver value from their EMV investments. We help with the technical challenges involved in the digital transformation of payments through tokenization and mobile devices, and with the business cases behind the development of future payment technologies such as the blockchain and instant payments. Come and find out more at www.chyp.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. We're going to continue our startup bootcamp week this week from New York and speak to CFX.
Perfect. Good afternoon. Thanks for coming on a weekday, really excited. My partner and I were building our last company. We noticed that there was one problem that almost every investor had in stopping them from investing through the portal. One issue that came up constantly. How can I access the cash that I make in this investment? How can I access that cash if I need it? My partner and I looked at each other and said, we could solve this problem. So we did. We built a fully integrated end-to-end transaction engine that integrates banking, compliance, document management, system integration, and really effectively made an alternative asset trading platform.
I met Jordan Pischfeld, one of the co-founders and managing director at CFX Markets, in the lobby of Startup Bootcamp's New York space. Jordan was eating a salad for lunch, your prototypical fintech founder, wearing flip-flops, salmon-colored shorts, a black polo shirt, had a scruffy beard. Now, to be fair, I live in Florida, so I'm always wearing flip-flops. I do own salmon-colored shorts. I, too, have a scruffy beard, and I also like salads. I asked Jordan where the rest of his team was, and he replied it was just him. Great, I thought to myself. Brett and JP picked interesting interviews with actual startup teams. I'm stuck interviewing one guy talking about a topic I know bupkis about, private securities. And I was tasked to get 25 minutes of material so the producer could edit this. And as usual, I was dead wrong. We had a fascinating conversation that I had to end 35 minutes later. And we also talked about snowboarding.
So I'm with Jordan Pischfeld. And you're actually the managing director at CFX Markets. So this is the first test, I think, in any one of these boot camp competitions is the elevator pitch. I know you got this down, Jordan. So give me the elevator pitch.
That's right. So we are a secondary market platform that assists and facilitates the transfer of assets, specifically secondary market assets. So you've already purchased this asset from an issuer or a sponsor. Now you're looking for some level of liquidity. We're the place to go to kind of find that liquidity and then help you walk through the transaction.
They always talk about the birth story of a product or a company. So what's the birth story for yours?
So I was building a company with my partner called Pure Realty. It's an online capital raising platform for real estate. One of the features that we had built within that company and within that platform was this secondary market component. So we constantly got asked this question, how could we access liquidity? What if I need to sell? What if I need cash? And so we built in this fully integrated secondary market within the Pure Realty system. But what we quickly realized was this wasn't just a problem for our customers. It was a problem for the entire alternative asset industry. We took all of that we built and we kind of spun it off into this new entity.
It's a real common story, you know, where the product starts one way. And then as you're putting the business together, there's that one little problem, that pain in your neck. It spins into a whole separate company.
I think that's exactly right. I think, you know, we're fortunate in that kind of the company that we built got off the ground and launched and it is actually executing its original business plan. But at the same time, recognizing that the market opportunity of what we had as one feature really was compelling and something that we wanted to, as an executive and founding team, to focus on.
How old is the company?
So we launched CFX Markets January of 2016, so we're still 7 months old. We just actually went public with our platform in April, we've done now less than 30 trades to date. So still very, very young.
And what's the name of your partner?
His name is Juan Hernandez. He's a technologist out of Northwestern. His claim to fame, we'll call it, is a fantasy stock exchange around singers. So similar to the Hollywood Stock Exchange where you can kind of buy assets of movie stars. He did it for the singing.
What's the name of that?
So the Hollywood Stock Exchange? So that went off and he was doing it on the singer side in 2008, 2009.
Yeah, I've read about that. That's actually a pretty cool
It was stock. Great. It kind of allowed him to understand the mechanisms and dynamics around, you know, asset ownership and transfer.
So what is your background? So if you have this company around real estate, or Pure Realty product, and your partner has got a really cool background,
I know you're going to blow me away with this answer. So what is your background?
Yeah, I was a classically trained lawyer, actually.
So we're done with the interview.
Yeah, right.
How many times did you get that joke?
So, I was in law school, and actually how Pure Realty and even how CFX came about, I'm sure your users and you're aware of the changing securities laws under the Jobs Act. So I was following that a lot, and I actually sit on the board now as treasurer of the Crowdfunding Professional Association, which is the trade industry organization of crowdfunding.
You're probably the fourth or fifth founder or co-founder of a fintech company that I've talked to who comes out of law. And I like seeing that trend. We get too much bad press, right? Which I think is completely unfounded.
I agree with both of those statements. I think that there's a lot of bad press, and most of it is unfounded. And in fact, I think the kind of increased adoption of fintech does so many things, including provide transparency, access to information, consumer protection in a way that was never possible before. And with the percentage of negative opportunities decreasing, but because of the information transparency that we're creating, they're far more visible. And so it's kind of this weird balance of great access to information, but also providing that access to some of those small failures. And as a result, the industry gets a little bit more beat than it probably should. But I'm comfortable with that for a lot of reasons. I think that we should all be held to a higher standard. And I also think that that's what information technology is supposed to do. It's supposed to create the most perfect method of executing a business plan. And so as we all kind of strive for that, that's the point.
I also like that you're not new, right? This isn't your first rodeo. You've kind of proven out a model and done this. What was the biggest lesson learned as somebody who helped found or co-found a company coming out of Pure Realty?
So many lessons. Red Bull. coming from law, which is a much slower industry to adopt almost any type of technology, but also a very pampered industry in a lot of ways. I mean, so when you start a new company, you have to do all of those things. And when it's the first time doing all those things, you stumble a lot. And that's one of the things I feel really fortunate about now with our second go is, hire a bookkeeper right away. Like, you're not an accountant. Don't try to be an accountant. You're a lawyer and you're a lot of other things, but you're definitely not an accountant. So go out and really try to get the right people in those positions as soon as possible. And then the other thing that we learned was, we had fundraised for our last business. We got some great success early on, and then kind of took our foot off the gas of that fundraising, and because we had kind of satisfied the need that we had for the short term, didn't really want to keep fundraising because it's the worst experience ever. But that for us, I think, was a big key in this round of fundraising, not stopping our fundraising until we get the exact number that we know we need to execute our business plan for the next 18 months, which is where we want to be. So with Pure, it was great. We switched from a high growth company to just a cash flow real estate investment company, but it's lost its ability to scale the way we know we want CFX to scale because of that kind of initial failure of taking our foot off the gas and just solving the short term problem.
You're Chicago based, right?
Correct.
Both companies.
Correct.
How did you land in Chicago and not say Silicon Valley or New York?
More of a life story than a business story, right? Obviously moved to Chicago for the weather, just beautiful winters there, right? as a VC,
okay, check. Yeah. Wondering about judgment.
All right. But the story is pretty simple, and it's probably the most common story. My wife, who I loved at the time, who was not my wife at the time, but I wanted to make her my wife eventually, was moving to Chicago for her job. So I moved with her, found my job as a lawyer, which I was originally planning to do anyways, and really fell in love with Chicago. Like, the opportunity with the Jobs Act and crowdfunding and my passion for a massive change in securities regulation that hadn't happened in 80 plus years was pretty much the end of my ability to execute as a lawyer and needed to start executing as an entrepreneur.
How big is your team?
So we have three managing partners right now, myself, Juan, and our head of trading, who's a 20-year veteran in the secondary market security space. I mean, I'm really, really excited about our team. I think our team is the thing that makes our business and our story so compelling is because there isn't a major gap in the early stages of what we're trying to do.
So I expect to see in demo day some great Trinity slide, right?
Yeah.
You can be Morpheus. What about the growth of the company? So you said something that really struck me. I wrote this down. If you're not an accountant, hire a bookkeeper. And my clients are the very large banks in my day job. And that's one of the areas we focus in on, is drifting from what they are, from what their core is. And that's why I like fintech so much, because you have that very narrow focus. So how do you, as a managing partner for this, how do you keep that focus?
It's hard. It's complicated. And it's one of the daily struggles that we have. And specifically for me, I'm very hands-on. I like to understand every part of our business. I like to be involved in a lot. And my partner, who's actually has even more startup experience than me, I think he's founded four or five companies even before we got together. He's gone through this before, and so he grounds me a lot, which I love.
Yeah, I mean, there's that term in the industry of scope creep, right, with products. And I think with startups, there's focus drift is a term. I just trademarked that, Rachel, so get that. But I see that a lot. And so this is interesting because we're here at Startup Bootcamp. That's where we're actually recording this. This isn't your first startup, and yet you're going to do a demo day here in New York with Startup Bootcamp, which is a great organization. What led to the interest to do that?
So we were interested in a lot of things about Startup Bootcamp. We wanted to be in New York. We understood that New York had a lot to offer us, but it was a very complicated place to penetrate. And so to come here without some sort of entry point would have been far more expensive and far more time consuming. And we were actually recruited by a few New York-based accelerator programs with top names. We loved the focus of Startup Bootcamp. The fact that it was fintech focused, that I wasn't going to waste my time with investors who had only invested in consumer product or, you know, healthcare or insurance even, but was financial technology focused. People who understand, you know, what REITs are, what securities are, what the compliance issues we're going to face are. And indeed, that people have who own these illiquid alternative assets. I think one of the things that happens a lot when we would pitch our product and our company to traditional VCs who are not fintech focused is the first place they go is the venture space. Oh, I can sell my venture shares that I've invested in some company that nobody's ever heard of on this market. You know, that existed kind of in second market for pre-IPO shares, but for us, that wasn't really the value proposition because the pricing of those assets is just way too spread out. We wanted to help people who are in traditionally owned assets, who were sold this, you know, not as necessarily an accredited investor as the last level of investment, but really as the first entry point into alternatives, where they may not have understood the lack of liquidity when they originally purchased the asset itself. And to help those who maybe have held these assets for 10 or 15 years, their investment thesis has dramatically changed since when they originally purchased it. And we can now help them liquidate that and put it into something more appropriate, like a fixed income security or an annuity, depending on where they are in their investment horizon. So
it's really a life event product, isn't it? That's how I look at it.
Right now we are. I mean, we expect obviously some other things to happen, but our focus right now is life event REITs. That's it. We're staying as laser focused as we can.
Narrow and deep, right?
Yeah. We have a really good market there. Given the age of the current owners, it's about 65% of current REIT owners are over the age of 65. So it's a huge amount, $84 billion in total asset value, 1.2 million shareholders. We're talking about 600,000 individuals are over the age of 65 and looking for maybe a change in their asset allocation. And so we're definitely excited about the opportunity to help them in a way that really wasn't possible before.
And I'm curious to circle back on one thing that you mentioned coming out of Chicago, the Crowdfunding Trade Association. Did I say that right?
The crowdfunding professional.
Professional.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realize there was one, and I love that. How'd you get involved with that?
So we actually formed it in 2012, I think, with the passage of the Jobs Act. So it's the Crowdfunding Professional Association. I had been writing and commenting to the SEC for about a year before I started Pure Realty. And then with Pure Realty, was obviously very involved and active in redefining the accredited investor rules, working on Illinois interstate regulations. And the board reached out to me and requested that that I join. And then at that time I said, okay, that's great. If I'm going to give time to this, though, I want to be a little bit more involved. And so ran for treasurer and have acted as treasurer for the board since. And we started an expansion program right now. I'm now the co-chair of the real estate division of the Crowdfunding Professional Association. With a real heavy focus on kind of standardizing the rules and materials in marketing these alternative asset products, and also bringing liquidity to that space. And that's what gets really exciting when you think of where we can go and what the industry is doing. You know, REITs are a fantastic product to stay laser focused on, and we will, and we're not thinking about other things except at night when we sleep. And when we do sleep and dream about the grand market that's becoming available, the online capital raising business is what gets really exciting, right? It's a massively growing industry. I think the last word was about $34 billion will be raised online direct to consumer in 2017. So within 5 years of activity, it's about half of the entire volume of private REITs over the last 25 years. And what that also does is create a much more accessible and digitized format for ownership. And while we plug into these assets and these issuers directly, the trading becomes instantaneous in a way that, it really wasn't possible before. So not only is our team great and the market huge, but the timing is perfect. And so all of that together is why we're really excited about what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm a very visual person. In my head right now, I have this Venn diagram going of your product and crowdfunding and the securities side of that all overlapping.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they're more and more and more.
So this is going to be the most important question I ask you, and I'm sure Rachel won't include this, but you're the first person on their LinkedIn profile under skills and endorsements to have snowboarding listed.
It's an important skill.
That is incredible.
Yeah, well, if you can't get down a mountain on a stick, what can you do?
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in South Florida, actually.
Okay, so let's peel the onion just a little bit. All right, you're from South Florida. You went to Gainesville, and yet you have snowboarding.
That's right. That's actually.
And you live in Chicago.
That's why I have snowboarding. Because nobody would expect a Floridian to have a skill like that. But I was a fortunate child. My father is an orthopedic surgeon, and all of the orthopedic surgeon conferences are in Aspen every year. From a very young age, I was able to learn how to ski and learn how to snowboard. I only injured myself once, where I broke both of my feet.
It was your dad, right? I mean,
exactly. I called him, and he's like, "You broke both of your feet. How are you going to get in?" I was living in New York at the time, actually, and it was winter. So it was very, very difficult to get around in New York with no feet fucking cast off.
That's fantastic.
Well, that's it for the show this week on Breaking Banks. Again, thanks to our sponsor, Temenos, and thank you for listening to Breaking Banks. Listen, if you like the show, please go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. It'll really help us out. I know there's hundreds of thousands of you guys out there all around the world that have listened to the show. It's a grateful way for us to get the news out about Breaking Banks, so please check it out. Don't forget, coming up in August, our blockchain special. Got some really incredible interviews from all around the world on the use of blockchain that you're really going to love. Have a great week. Until then, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.